Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today we are answering your listener questions.
That's right, Joel. Our listener question episodes are always very fun to do because we get to hear from five different listeners every single week. This week, we have a question about investing in your 20s. We have a question coming out of Texas regarding solar panels. And then towards the end, we're going to answer a question regarding a HELOC, or we think it's a HELOC, but we'll get into that at the end of this episode.
Ooh, the mysterious HELOC shrouded in
secrecy.
We
think it's a HELOC, yeah. But first, man, let's share a quick tip from a listener. Listener Susie, she wrote in, and recently we talked about Canopy and how that's a fantastic option for folks to get streaming video content from their local library.
For free.
For free, exactly. Yeah, they've got great video. They've got great movies. They've got some awesome kids content. Like, I know they've got PBS Kids on there, stuff like that. But she wrote in and she was mentioning how her local library didn't have that as an option. And she was kind of bummed out. But what she discovered was that the bigger library or library system in her state allows for anybody that lives within that state to have a membership, to have a library card essentially at that library. And so for her, she was basically a long distance member of the Boston Library. And so through that, she was able to access Canopy and all the joy that it has to offer, which is just a fantastic perk.
Yeah, that's great. We mentioned on the show about cutting the cord and cutting your TV costs. We looked it up and we don't have access to Canopy, Matt, in our library system, which is a huge bummer.
Yeah, totally lame.
But I did some digging and I couldn't find any other library system nearby where we live that we have access to. So
I totally looked after that email came in too. And I thought, what other library in the state is going to be bigger than the Atlanta library?
Right.
So my search really didn't last long.
Yeah.
Kate was telling me to check in Athens maybe just because there might be some affiliation with UGA and I don't know, they might have a bigger system there, but I kind of ran out of time or patience.
Yeah, well, that's true. And if you're affiliated with the university, Canopy's offered through that affiliation too sometimes. So it's definitely worth looking into. And it's good to know that, especially if you are a member of a smaller library system where you live and Canopy is not offered, to maybe look for some of those bigger library systems in your state to see if you could potentially join one of those and get access. Because there are, like you said, just some really great options for viewing content. A lot of like cool indie flicks and a lot of great kid content. So, I mean...
What about indie kid flicks? Is that a thing?
Maybe those two.
It's like, oh, my kid's crying. I don't think they need to be watching this documentary.
I don't know if kids should be watching Wes Anderson films or not, but that's what I tend towards, though.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to mention the reason that the smaller libraries often tend not to have Canopy is because it costs a lot of money. That somebody else had written in as well, mentioning that it's not actually free. Like, somebody is paying for it, and it's the library system that's paying for it. So it makes sense that these huge libraries have that as an offering because they have bigger budgets versus those smaller town libraries. They can't afford to offer those posh offerings.
Yeah, you're completely right. It's kind of expensive for libraries to be able to offer something like Canopy or even really to have like a robust DVD portfolio at the library, because educational systems like libraries and universities, they pay more than we pay. They don't pay $20 for a DVD. They pay like $200 because of the way things are structured.
It's a lot of money, man.
Yeah, I know. I wish that wasn't the case, but it does make Canopy prohibitively expensive for some library systems. And yeah, I don't know. I hope we get it here soon because it's a really cool app and it's nice to be able to stream stuff as opposed to having to go in person and grab the DVD and bring it home and stuff like that. I mean, I don't even think we have a DVD player anymore.
I was going to say we no longer do that at all because our DVD player is up in the attic, covered in dust, and we need to get rid of it because I just don't want it in my life.
Yeah, I think ours broke and we were like, well, I don't think we need it anymore. So we're just kind of done with it. It's pretty much streaming only in our household.
Yeah, for sure, man. You want to introduce our beer for this episode?
Sure. Yeah. Today on the show, we are drinking a beer called Birra Nazionale by Birra Baladin.
And Birra.
Yeah,
I think that's how they say it, right? You got to like roll those R's a little bit. It's Italian.
I did not roll my R's very well on the intro. This is an Italian beer, if you couldn't tell. Our friend Andrew was just over in Rome, and he was kind enough to bring us back this really fine example of an Italian beer. So really excited to try this one on the show and talk about it at the end.
It's in such a cute little bottle, right? It's really small, and I'm going to describe it to folks. It reminds me of an old school glass bottle of aftershave, specifically Old Spice. I remember my dad having this shaped bottle where it's kind of it tapers up to the top with a little stopper. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
See, all I can think of when I'm thinking about aftershave is the Home Alone scene where he slaps it on his face. And it's like that green bottle of Brut, which everybody had in like the late 80s, early 90s.
I will say I'm a fan of Brut.
It's basically classic dad smell. So if you like
maybe
that's
why. Like now that I have kids, I've kind of transitioned into that role, including the way I smell. Because I'm like, well, I want to smell like a dad. So I don't want to smell like a bro.
Well, I'm proud of you for carrying the torch and keep on smelling like a dad for all of us, for all the dads out there. All right. Yeah. And so let's get on to our listener questions, Matt. Like every week, we've got five on deck that we are going to tackle. And for anybody out there who wants to submit a question for Matt and I to take on a future Ask HTM episode, well, there are really simple instructions to submit your voice question. All you got to do is go to howtomoney.com/ask. The instructions are there. Super simple. It'll take you a couple minutes to submit your question to us, and we hope to take it on a future episode. All right, let's get to the first one now about converting a 403B.
Hi, Matt and Joel. This is Ashley from Hebron, Connecticut. I hope you guys are doing well. I love your podcast, and I really appreciate all the great information and advice you guys are giving out. But I do have a question I was hoping you could help me out with. My previous employer was a hospital, so they only offered a 403B plan. I now currently work for somebody who offers a 401K. I know I'm not able to roll my 403B plan into my 401K, so I was wondering what you thought the best options were for the 403B at this point. Should I let it sit and gain money and interest as it sits? Should I or can I roll it over into an IRA or a Roth IRA without any tax implications? Or do you have any other advice that you think I should do with this plan at this point? I appreciate the help, guys. Thanks.
All right, Ashley. So it's cool that you have a 403B, but you're talking about maybe rolling that over to something new. The answer to that is yes. Now is the time to do that. You do not want to leave your money currently in your 403B. And that's because they are just one of the worst retirement accounts out there, unfortunately.
Yeah, kick that 403B to the curb because the fees are way too high.
Yeah, and that's typically why. I mean, the different insurance companies are the ones who often run the plans for nonprofits, school systems, or in your case, hospitals. And this is going to mean higher fees and just worst fund choices for you to have your retirement money invested in.
It's such a bummer, Matt, because people that work in these just amazing professions, a lot of nurses, a lot of teachers, often have access to the retirement accounts that have the highest fees.
That are kind of the crummiest out there.
Yeah, and have the worst fund options. Honestly, it's upsetting. I wish that we would change the system and really just simplify it. Give just fewer types of accounts and accounts that prioritize lower fees across the board for people in any profession, whether it's a nonprofit or teacher or in the for-profit corporate world. That would be great, right? But Ashley now has this opportunity to ditch the 403B with the potential and likely high fees for something better.
So yeah, now is the time that you want to go ahead and do that rollover, Ashley. However, you want to make sure that you are being careful when you do this because you don't want to run afoul of the IRS. Essentially, you don't want to create a taxable event. So make sure to follow these steps appropriately. You don't want a check made out to you directly. Instead, you want a direct rollover, which is sent to your new IRA trustee. If you fail to do that, there's a chance you could lose up to 35% of the money. And that's because you would get hit with a 10% early withdrawal fee, and then you would pay taxes on that money, depending on whatever tax bracket you're in. So if you're, say, in the 25% tax bracket, you get hit with that 10% fee, boom, all of a sudden, you're parting with 35% of your money.
Yep, and that's no bueno. So when you're thinking about where to go, I love your idea of rolling this 403B into an IRA. There is a chance that your new employer, who you now have a 401k with, will let you roll your 403B into this 401k. The IRS allows that, but it's up to your employer whether or not they actually allow it. So it might be worth considering if that 401k provider is one of the uber low cost providers who offers you access to a lot of great low cost funds. But rolling it into an IRA is a great idea too, because you get to pick exactly where it goes. So the way to handle this is to contact your current 403b administrator. If you don't know who that is, check your last statement. Tell them you want to initiate a rollover and who you want this 403b to be rolled over to. And we just mentioned the potential low-cost investment companies that your 401k provider might be doing business with. Well, you're going to want to look at one of those for an IRA rollover. So companies like Vanguard or Fidelity or M1, those are going to be the best places to roll this 403b over into an IRA. And all you got to do is pick your favorite, ask that new company where the current administrator should send this check, and boom, you're good to go. And you'll have a wider choice of low-cost funds at your disposal that you in all likelihood never had access to before inside of your 403B with your former employer.
And let's highlight, too, why we're calling this a rollover. A 403B is with pre-tax money. And with a traditional IRA that you could be rolling it into, it's also with pre-tax money. And so this is essentially a very similar retirement plan, just with better options.
Yeah, it's like apples to apples, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You're not changing things up too much. You're just exchanging into a much better product, but the same tax treatment.
Yes. Yeah, the same tax treatment. That's the best way to look at it. Because another option is that instead of rolling it over into something that's very similar, you could convert it to a Roth IRA, which you mentioned as a possibility. Just know that you'll have a lump sum tax bill due when you make that conversion, because instead of realizing that tax benefits now on the front end, you're going to be realizing that on the back end down the road. And so you have to pay that tax now. And it's a great idea, though, if you have that spare money now to go ahead and pay that tax, and you would be able to avoid those taxes down the road. This is especially great if your income is lower currently and if you're in a good and low tax bracket.
Yeah, and with the most recent tax reform bill, tax brackets were lowered. And there's a chance that in a few years, tax brackets go back up again. And so if you're in a low tax bracket and you have the cash on hand to be able to pay that tax bill, converting your 403B into a Roth instead of just doing that rollover into a traditional IRA, that's a great idea. We just want to make sure you're aware and you're not shocked when you file your taxes at the beginning of next year, because that's a rude awakening for folks who didn't plan ahead for that. So
yeah, exactly. And that's what I would do. I would totally convert it to that Roth. You and I, we both love that Roth action.
Yeah, and then it just grows tax-free for years and years and years, for decades on end. So it's a good way to go. Ashley, best of luck with this. All right, we got more questions to come, including one about solar, and we'll get to that right after the break.
All right, Jill, before we get to that solar question, let's hear about investing in your 20s.
Hey guys, it's Gonzalo from Connecticut. I'm about to finish school with very minimal debt since I decided to trade school was something I would enjoy more. I only took that debt on since it's interest-free 6 months after I graduate, so I'll have money by then. And that student loan will help improve my credit score. I work a full-time job but don't make a lot of money. I have opened a Roth IRA with Vanguard thanks to your guys' recommendations, so now I'm wondering, where do I look into investing next? I understand compound is king, so what ideas would you guys have me look into investing in your 20s? Thanks, love the show, and keep up the great work.
Gonzalo, that's a great question, man. I got to say, your choice to go to a trade school, I love that. The key is that you said you would enjoy it more. And man, there are so many people just going to college, taking on a bunch of student loan debt, and they haven't put much thought into what they enjoy, into what they want to do. And you're making an intentional decision, which is awesome. It's hard to do in your early 20s. I know even for me, I kind of waffled back and forth. So it's great to hear that you're going to graduate with minimal debt. That gives you so many options and so much flexibility. But I just want to reinforce the importance of paying off those student loans that you took out, especially if they're in that 6 to 7% interest rate, once that interest-free period is over. You don't want to forget about them. You want to crush that debt. And then you can start focusing on the heart of your question, which is beginning to invest more of your income.
Yeah, Gonzalo, that's awesome that you've already started your Roth. That's a little more traditional investing. But the first thing that we would suggest is to make sure that you are investing in yourself. Your human capital is going to be key to you earning more money. And when you're able to earn more, you will be able to invest more money. Whether that be just through additional training, maybe getting certificates, even like networking and different relationships that you build within your industry. These are all things that could lead you to earning more at your current employer. And honestly, man, it could also lead to you potentially starting your own business, doing the trade, the specific skill that you learned how to do.
Yeah, I think, Matt, sometimes in our early 20s, I love the idea of people opening a Roth, putting money in a Roth, trying to max that out. But if it's strapping you to the point where you're not able to prioritize investing in yourself, where you're not able to take a course or pursue a certificate or have that seed money to start that business that you want to, well, that's when you want to actually back off the investing in the stock market and you want to redirect that money into investing in yourself, because that kind of stuff pays dividends for decades to come too, and sometimes in a more meaningful way.
Man, I so hear you, because that is the first thing that I did when I first learned about Roth IRAs. I totally opened up a Roth. I didn't really have much of an income at the time, and I definitely didn't have an emergency fund either, but it's something that you learn about, you hear about, and man, I totally went for it, opened that up, made some contributions, and then it sat there and I wasn't able to make any more contributions. So I'm going to guess for maybe 2 to 3 years, because I realized I needed to do some other things first. And for me, at least, to get my financial ship pointed in the right direction.
Yeah. And we would never tell someone in their early 20s, don't invest in the stock market, because we know, like Gonzalez said, the power of compounding returns. It's huge. It will make you wealthy if you continue to invest even really a small amount, $1,000, a couple thousand dollars every year. By the time you're in your 60s, you're going to have a lot of money because you prioritized investing. But even though we know that power, there's a huge power in growing your knowledge and your skills in your early years, your postgraduate years, so that you can make more money. And that is going to have, I would say, even a bigger return for you over time.
Yeah, certainly over the lifetime of that career. So that's investing in yourself. But then, Gonzalo, what you're asking about is traditional investing, right? And so we're going to get to that part of your question. You mentioned the Roth. You want to work towards maxing out that Roth IRA. Also, if you have tax-advantaged retirement accounts through work, you want to make sure that you're contributing there as well. And actually, if your employer offers a match, you want to make sure that you are contributing enough to take full advantage of the match first with that 401k, and then go ahead and max out your Roth IRA.
Yeah, don't be afraid also to invest aggressively. When you're in your 20s, you're obviously in the wealth building stage of your financial life. And so putting pretty much all of your money into low-cost index funds is so important. I know a lot of people in their 20s, they open up an account like a 401k where they work, or a Roth IRA, but then they don't know where to put it inside of that. And Matt and I would say low-cost index funds are the way to go. And also set a goal to increase the percentage of what you're saving and investing every 6 months. If you can set a reasonable amount that you can contribute now and that you can continue to put in and month out, that's great. But you also want to make sure that you're bumping that up as you go. And in particular, as you get pay increases, that's when it's easier to do it.
Yeah, you don't want to have that American savings rate, which I think is like around 7%. You want to have the savings rate that they have in Malaysia or Singapore. I think it's like 40%.
They're wicked savers over there.
They do. And Gonzalo, you might also want to consider real estate. For you, that might be a good option. You didn't say specifically what trade that you're in school for, but I'm guessing you might be handy. And if that is the case, it actually might be pretty convenient for you to not only own, but manage your different properties. I'm thinking if you're an electrician or a plumber, skills like that are going to relate directly to you being able to save money, manage properties better, keeping tenants happy, while at the same time building wealth.
Yeah, Matt, I agree. I think real estate can be a great option. The big thing if you're in your early 20s is, are you planning to stay put? If you're planning to stay put, you love where you live.
So true.
Yeah, you've got a solid job, or you just live in a location with lots of great job prospects and it's a place that you love. Well, then real estate makes a lot of sense. But if you feel like you're going to be moving, picking up and going, the transaction costs involved in real estate can be a bit heavy. And so you might want to focus instead on the other things that we mentioned.
So Joel, for you, if you could pick any trade that you were going to learn, what would you pick?
Oh, I totally know. Underwater welding. It just sounds awesome. I don't know. I might get a little nervous being down there for all that time, but it sounds really, really cool.
So with like the scuba tank, you've got your torch down there.
Exactly.
You're like blasting stuff. I guess you have to have on a scuba mask, but then you also have to have on like the visor that you can't see through.
That's almost like superhero status right there.
That sounds pretty insane. I'm not going to lie. For me, it would be an electrician. I don't understand how electricity works. And so to me, an electrician is like part electrician and they're part magician, because I don't know how this works, but I just know it does work when I flip the switch. And so I think that's pretty cool. Plus, when it comes to the different trades, you don't see electricians kind of carrying a lot of equipment around. It just doesn't seem like it's backbreaking work. And so if I think long term, what do I want to be doing? I want to be doing the sort of magic trade of electrical work.
All right. Well, if this podcast tanks, we know what we're doing next, right? Speaking of electrical work, our next question is about solar panels.
Hey guys, my name is Joe Trink and I live in Katy, Texas with my wife and my son. I'm a huge fan of the show. So thank you guys so much for continuing to educate people on personal finance. I think what you guys are doing is awesome, so keep it up. My wife and I finally just moved into a home where we're looking at staying for quite a while for the first time. We've been kind of moving every 2 years, purchasing homes that we convert into rental homes. So now that we're staying put, we're looking into going solar, and being in Texas, we get a lot of sun. So my question to you is, have you guys thought about it, or have you had any other listeners write in, just because 2019 is the last year to claim the 30% federal tax refund for solar systems? It's been kind of hard. We've been going back and forth because a lot of these systems to go 100% can get pretty costly. But funny enough, if you actually do it this year, it's kind of looking like if you finance it for 10 years at 3%, or even 20 years at 5%, it might actually even be cheaper because of the tax credit to do it now and finance it rather than just save up the cash. Also, this is kind of paired with the fact that the new tariff on Chinese solar panels is about to go into effect. So the market is about to go up. Just thought I'd kind of get your thoughts on that. Thank you guys so much. Keep doing what you're doing. Bye.
Thanks, Joe. We will keep it up. You know, Joel and I, we like podcasting.
It's the best.
It is. And even though someday I would love to learn more about some electrical work, I am planning to continue to podcasting because it's fun.
You could maybe become a decent electrician, but stick to podcasting, buddy.
Well, Joe, it sounds like that you took the path that Joel took in acquiring rentals. I guess I actually did this with one. But now that it sounds like you've found the house that you want to live in for the foreseeable future, getting solar, it sounds like that might be a great idea for you. And like we mentioned earlier, Texas is a great spot because there aren't a ton of trees. That's one of the things that here in Georgia and Atlanta specifically, there's tons of trees everywhere. Like you fly into Atlanta, and I don't know if you've ever looked out the window, get that window seat. Atlanta is just plopped down into the middle of this giant forest. So even if we did have just as many sunny days as Texas, you've got all those silly trees blocking all that valuable light. You know what I'm saying?
Just give me an axe and a couple weeks, I'll take care of it, man.
Just kidding. I love trees. But in particular, though, for real, in these older neighborhoods like that you and I live in, we've got trees around here that are 80 to 120 years old, I think, and they tower over our old houses. And so that's one of the tricky things that makes it difficult for us to consider solar.
Yeah, those big old trees, they're beautiful, but they block the sun from hitting your roof for sure. And yeah, Joe, you mentioned the solar tax credit. 2019, as you mentioned, is the last year to get that full 30% tax credit. I did want to mention you still get a 26% tax credit next year and even a 22% tax credit in 2021 as it phases out. So it might not necessarily be an emergency, but you definitely want to pursue getting solar with some urgency. And on that note, could there be better deals in the future installing solar? Well, maybe. There's so many variables at play with the tax credit, tariffs, potential tariffs. Like, who knows? Will they get rolled back? Will they continue? Technology is getting better, and it's getting better quickly, which is leading to lower prices. Basically, it's not something that you can pinpoint and know that now is the exact perfect time to do this.
Yeah, well, one of the key components that we're discussing here is the tax credit. And just recently, Congress introduced a new bill that could potentially extend that tax credit for another 5 years. This is something that they've already done. And so I just wonder how many folks are kind of rushing to get these purchased and installed and to get that installation started because they want to jump on that 30%. And who knows, that tax credit could get extended. So yeah, like Joel said, it's tough to know if now is the perfect time. But what we do know right now, Joe, is your specific situation. And you mentioned financing, and that really could make sense for you. And so the average total installation cost, according to Energy Sage, is about $18,000. So that, financed over 10 years at 3%, like you mentioned, is about $2,800 in interest that you're going to pay. However, if you are able to snag that 30% tax credit, you are looking at a savings of $5,400 right there. So you're coming out ahead if you move forward and make that purchase now. From a number standpoint, you look good. You mentioned that 20-year financing option at 5%. That's pretty much a no-go, as the total interest for that loan would be around $10,000, which is about double the tax benefit that you would receive from that tax credit. And Joe, you didn't mention this option, but you definitely don't want to lease your solar panels. It's becoming more of a popular option, but if you were to do that, you get zero tax benefit because you don't own those panels.
All right, Joe, but the biggest way you're going to be able to save on your solar system install, obviously that tax credit is huge, and making sure that your solar install qualifies for that tax credit is huge. But solar installation is still kind of like a wild, wild west thing going on out there. And so there are lots of different companies doing these solar installation projects. You need to make sure that you get multiple quotes from different local installers in your area. And Matt mentioned Energy Sage, where we found that statistic earlier. Well, EnergySage.com is a great site to read more and shop local installers in your area. Prices vary so much. You might get a quote for $14,000 and then a quote for $24,000 for essentially the same kind of solar install. Make sure you vet these companies thoroughly and you talk to folks who have had solar installed by these companies. That's going to ensure that you find a company with a good reputation, who knows what they're doing, and offers a good value for the solar install that you're looking to get done.
And Joe, something else to keep in mind is the amount of time that it would take for you to essentially earn your money back. The average payback period is about 8 years, which I think for a lot of folks, that's doable, right? But if it's closer to 15 years, it may not be worth it for you. You may not even be there in that house. But hopefully having those solar panels there on the roof would boost your potential resale value.
Yeah, man. I feel like solar panels, actually, from everything I've read, really do boost the value of a home.
as long as they're not installed like right in the front lawn, you know, like the, when the satellite dishes first came out and they're massive and then you'd see them in yards back in the 80s.
Yeah,
you remember
look.
Those?
That's a bad look, yeah. But these are typically going to go on your roof, right? And so typically when you're selling your home, you're going to make your money back because a buyer is interested in having solar panels that will essentially pay their electricity bill too. By the way, Matt, you just mentioned the roof. One thing that you need to think about is the age of your roof. If your roof is in that kind of like 10-year-old range, like mine is, it makes the decision a little bit harder because basically you have to replace a roof that isn't really begging to be replaced. It's still in pretty good shape and it kind of feels like this extra expenditure that you have to come up with in order to make solar panels worth it. If you have either a pretty new roof installed within the last 3 to 5 years and you want to put solar panels on top of that, I think it makes sense. If you have a really, really old roof and you have to replace it anyway, well, I think it makes sense to install solar then. But if you're in my place and you're kind of in the middle, well, for me, it just puts another check in the corner of I'm just not ready to do solar quite yet.
Yeah, you're kind of in that no man's land as far as the roof goes. Do you think that's the biggest thing that's kind of kept you from maybe moving forward with solar panels for you guys? Because I know you love electric stuff. You got that electric car. I figured you'd want the electric house to match it.
No, I would love
the whole set.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest reason for me is the age of my roof, because it's that extra expenditure of $6,000 or $7,000 that I'd have to throw into the mix. And I'm just not ready to do it. Although I do see solar panels in my future at some point for sure.
Man, yeah, we are in a very similar boat, right? We don't have that brand new roof, but we also don't have an old crumbly roof. One of the biggest things, though, that's keeping me from kind of moving forward with solar is just worrying about being an early adopter. I have a tough time with the idea that I would drop a ton of money on these solar panels and then have the potential for technological advances to be just right around the corner that would either cause prices to drop drastically or to where your current solar panels just aren't really cutting it anymore. Because guess what? Everyone's got the Tesla roof and they look awesome and there's no panels on your roof at all. It just looks like you have a regular roof, you know?
I got to tell you, I'm totally down with waiting for the Tesla roof to get a lot cheaper and just have solar panels essentially as part of your roof as opposed to putting the panels on, you know?
Exactly. It's just built in. Have you seen like the terracotta style?
Yeah, it looks so good.
Super cool, yeah.
They got the terracotta, they got the slate. I mean, yeah, I have a feeling that that is going to be where things are headed. But who knows how long it takes until that becomes a cost-efficient way of putting solar on your roof, right?
Yeah, exactly. And if you're curious if your house would even be a good candidate for solar, check out Google's Project Sunroof, which you can obviously find by Googling it. But you just punch in your address and they will rank and give you a score as far as how well your house would do when it comes to solar. So Joe, in the end, you can crunch all the numbers. You can even figure out the return on your investment and compare that ROI to what you would actually earn if that money was invested in the market. From a numbers standpoint, it seems like the ROI is high and that it does make sense, but it's more than just the numbers. This is a personal decision. Some of it comes down to how you feel you're sort of playing your role in reducing energy costs. You're able to contribute overall to a cleaner environment. There are a lot of benefits that come from solar. As long as you are not over-leveraging and over-financing these panels and spending money that you don't have, we think that going solar could be a great move for you.
Yeah, and be sure to reach back out to us and let us know how it goes and what the numbers look like once you've actually done the install. I know I'm just super interested to know how it goes. All right, Matt, we got a couple more questions that we need to tackle, including a listener who is currently serving in the Peace Corps and has a question for us. We'll get to that right after the break.
All right, Joel, we're back from the break, and this next question comes from overseas. You and me, buddy, we're going global. Hit play on this one.
All right.
Salama, inona vovo. Hello, Matt and Joel. My name is Mary Claire, and I am a Peace Corps volunteer currently serving in the highlands of Madagascar. So when Peace Corps volunteers reach COS, or completion of service, we receive a reintegration stipend of about $8,000. So I guess my question, to put it simply, is if a young person such as myself saves or comes into a chunk of cash, what would be some smart and responsible options for that money? Thank you so much. Velum!
Matt, I do love getting these international questions. They provide a little bit of a flair to the show, which is kind of fun.
A little bit of zest.
First one from Madagascar. And probably the only thing I truly know about Madagascar is that 80% of the world's vanilla beans are grown in the country of Madagascar,
Well, I think the reason we know that is because of the global vanilla shortage that we had a couple years ago. Specifically, I think we can tie a lot of things to beer, but a lot of different breweries here in the States had to either raise the prices of beers that normally had vanilla in it, or they just stopped brewing those specific beers because the supply was so tight, or that the prices that were being charged were pretty dang high in response to the market. That's that supply and demand for you.
Yeah, a lot of the supply was wiped out due to a typhoon in Madagascar. And yeah, prices went sky high.
But hopefully the farmers have recovered there in Madagascar. And maybe that's even what Mary Claire was doing. Who knows?
Yeah, totally. All right, so let's get to Mary Claire's question. Your question could have different answers depending on who's asking it. For someone working in a traditional job who lands $8,000, let's say a gift from a parent or a relative, or a bonus through work, that $8,000 could be used in many different ways. We would suggest paying down high interest rate debt first and then prioritize setting up an emergency fund. And then we talk about investing in the market or yourself. But for you coming back from Peace Corps service, I feel like the answer is going to be a little bit different. Don't you think, Matt?
Yeah, I'm thinking the Peace Corps set up that completion of service fund for a good reason, to help folks transition back to life in the States. So with that in mind, I would be very conservative with that money. You want to make sure that it is kept liquid, because you might need that money as a security deposit or even rent for a place, that first month's rent. You might need that money to buy yourself some affordable transportation, maybe a cheap car, or even better, a decent bike. Or you might even be job hunting when you come back to the States, and you might need to live on that money for a period of time. So keeping that money liquid, easily accessible, is going to be key. Really, what you want to avoid doing is locking that money away. You don't want to invest that money yet, not until you've got steady income. You want to keep that liquid, and you can do that by keeping it in a high interest savings account. So Ally's got one, Discover does, CIT as well. We have an article on the site discussing why we're such big fans of CIT.
Yeah, and I realize that the answer to this question isn't really all that sexy. You might have had in mind when you asked the question, something bigger, better.
Or even just more complex, right?
Yeah, or even just a little more like stashing it in a high interest rate savings account doesn't feel like a big win or like you're doing something major with your funds. But ultimately, when you're transitioning back from your service in Madagascar, it is important to have access to those funds for wherever life may take you. And I gotta imagine, as you come back, it could take you in a whole lot of different directions, potentially other cities. It could take you to a whole new city for a new job. It really depends on your situation. And so we just want to wish you the best of luck as you do come back. And I hope that your time in Madagascar has been a wonderful one. All right, Matt, let's get to our next question. It's an interesting one involving an emergency fund and a home equity line of credit.
Hey guys, it's Andy over here in Utah. I'm very proud to say that I'm nearly debt-free, and that even includes the mortgage on my house, which should be paid off within the next 5 to 6 months. Although I know by the numbers that's not necessarily the smartest thing to do, but it was a little bit more important to me to not have any debt hanging over my head. With all that said, I have a line of credit attached to my credit union checking account that I keep at a zero balance at the beginning of each month. After hearing that you should always try to keep any balances under one-third of your maximum, I wound up talking to my credit union and getting that limit extended out to $10,000. Would it be beneficial to me to continue to try to push the limit of that account? I could think of a few semi-emergency situations when my emergency funds are depleted, and since I'm still under 59 years old, I don't really have access to my Roth account yet. That one-third of the credit available to me, though, would be quite useful. If I imagine things that would cause this situation, though, that came to, you know, make me need to use it, I would probably need more than that $3,000 that, you know, the one-third of $10,000 would give me. Now, if that limit was up to closer to like $20,000 to $25,000, that would be a little bit more like around $6,000 to $7,000 that would be useful without hurting my credit score. What is the downsides to, you know, extending that credit limit out as, you know, as far as I can take it? Thanks for all the information you guys hand out. It's very useful.
Andy, man, thanks so much for the question. And you say you're nearly debt-free, including the mortgage. That is stinking awesome. We're totally with you and understand how you said that it may not make the best sense from a financial standpoint, right, from the numbers, but not having that weight of that debt sort of hanging over you. Sometimes you need to do what's best for you mentally.
Yeah, Matt, there's an age-old debate in the personal finance community about paying off a mortgage and whether it's a smart idea or not, especially in an uber-low interest rate environment like that we're currently in. But if it's best for you mentally, do it. I totally understand that desire and agree with Andy on that. All right, so Andy said that this is a HELOC through his credit union. Well, it can be a good addition to your emergency fund if you own a home, especially if you own that home free and clear. Having an emergency fund is important too, right? Just cash in the bank that you can access. I'm not sure how much Andy has in savings, but having more cash on hand is the ideal place for that emergency fund, and would also mean you'd have less need for cash that you could pull out from a home equity line of credit.
And also, you mentioned your Roth there towards the end of the question. You do have access to your Roth. It's not ideal to pull money from your investments there, especially in a down cycle, but you can grab some of those contributions if you need them.
Yeah, exactly. Like, let's say you've been contributing $5,000 a year for the last 5 years to your Roth IRA. You've got a total of $25,000 of contributions in there. And it's also, in all likelihood, if you've invested in low-cost index funds, that's grown. So you might have $45,000 or $50,000 sitting there inside your Roth IRA. And of course, you cannot withdraw those earnings. But what you can withdraw, if need be, is the contributions that you've made to the Roth. So basically, if you find yourself in a situation where you don't have enough cash on hand in the savings account and you need a little bit more, well, taking a little bit of contribution money out of your Roth IRA is actually not the worst place to go in an emergency situation.
So Andy, you have no consumer debt and almost no mortgage at this point, which puts you in a really strong position financially. It also sounds like you do have emergency savings, which you can increase even more after you have that mortgage paid off, right? You're going to have much more of an ability. But then on top of that, you have your Roth contributions that you can also grab. So again, Andy, you're in a strong position financially, but if you wanted to increase that line of credit beyond that $10,000 just for that additional sort of backup parachute, this is like the backup to the backup parachute, right? That would be perfectly fine. The only downside that I can think of is if the interest rate on that line of credit isn't great. We're assuming that this is a HELOC, in which case that the interest rate would be pretty low. But if this is a personal line of credit or personal loan, the interest rate could be a lot higher. So just make sure you know the terms of your loan.
Yeah, Andy, it sounds like you're super cautious. I mean, obviously, because you're paying off your mortgage with a really low interest rate. And you're asking this question with a lot of nuance. You've got your finances in order. You're in a strong position, and there's just not much need to overthink it.
All right, man, let's take it back to the beer. This episode, we are drinking Nazionale by Birra Balladin. And again, this one was brought over to us by our buddy, Andrew. Man, this is a beer that is 100% made in Italy.
And this beer, man, I thought it was really, really interesting. It totally had some international flair going on. It was distinct, in my opinion. It had this like really interesting flavor profile. It felt very earthy, and I could tell there was a little bit of coriander in there, but not too much. It wasn't overwhelming. It just kind of added this nice note. And typically, that's not my favorite flavor. But because it was just in a small quantity, it was actually really pleasant, I thought. So, I really enjoyed this beer. I haven't had many Italian beers, but this is the best one I've ever had, I think.
Yeah, I think the only other Italian beer I've had is Peroni. So this definitely takes the cake.
It definitely tops that.
And I'm with you regarding that coriander. It almost did have that sort of Belgian edge to it right when you took that first sip. But what this beer had that some of those other beers don't have, though, is just this bright, almost lemony sort of tartness to it. It really surprised me. It wasn't at all what I was expecting, but it made this beer taste just really fresh and alive in my mouth. And I was very pleasantly surprised at how much I like this beer. You know, you see a little beer like that in a small bottle, you kind of expect it just to be sort of like a, almost like a trinket beer. It's like, okay, this isn't going to be that great. It just has some Italian written on it. Give it to your friend who's a beer lover. But this is the kind of beer that I could have pretty much every week.
Yeah, I feel like this beer definitely went beyond just a cute label. It was really tasty. So yeah, big thanks to our friend Andrew for bringing this one back from his awesome trip.
Next time, why don't you take us with you?
Yeah, we'll hit up a bunch of Italian breweries. I'm down with that.
Cool. Well, Joel, I think that's going to be it for this episode. You can find our show notes on our website at howtomoney.com.
Yeah, and if you've got a question for Matt and I that you would like us to consider for an upcoming Ask HTM episode, well, all you got to do is go to howtomoney.com/ask. You will see the incredibly simple instructions for submitting a voice question to us, and we would love to consider your question for an upcoming episode. All right, buddy, until next time.
Yeah.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.